We are going to talk football and some politics as well. Tommy Tuberville making that Senate run in Alabama, joining us right now on the Loud Security Systems Newsmaker line. Coach, how you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you guys doing?
Good, Tommy. We appreciate the time this morning.
Yes, sir.
Talk about the political run. How's it coming along, the run for Senate?
You know, it's going good, going real well. I've been working at it for a year. Everybody kind of opened their eyes a little bit going, football coach for U.S. Senator. And I keep telling them, you know, I could take a bunch of football coaches and basketball coaches that do a heck of a lot better than what we got up there right now, because we've actually made a few decisions in our lifetime, and we know what's going on in the country. So I travel everywhere, you know, meeting with people. You know, after the last couple, 6 weeks, I guess, you know, we kind of hit the wall with this pandemic, but getting ready to go back out on the road. And I won the primary, but I didn't get enough votes to win it outright, so I have a runoff against the former Attorney General and a 20-year swamp dweller here in Alabama, and we'll have that July 14th, and then we'll have the general in November. But it's going good. Thanks for asking.
Hey, Tommy,
parallels between being a head coach and a political figure?
Well, it's all about leadership. You know, you got to go out and you got to speak your mind. I'm doing it for the right reasons. I'm not taking a salary. I'm giving it to the veterans of Alabama. I understand leadership. I understand what's going on in the country. You know, I've dealt with drug problems, as all coaches do. You deal with drug problems, mental health problems. You go into homes all over the country. You deal with education, which right now is in a total mess, high school and college. And so there's got to be some changes. And who better knows than the people that actually goes out and knows the problems, which are our coaches, whether it's football, basketball, baseball, makes no difference. But we know how to set a game plan, work, have common sense, and have a common goal. And I'm looking forward to the challenge.
Tommy, I'm not looking to age you, but if I ask you about Arkansas State, where this whole thing got started, you know, a lot of people certainly around here know about your time in Miami and the rings that you have because of that. They certainly know about your time at Ole Miss and Auburn and then finishing up in Cincinnati. But the Arkansas State part of it, somebody had to tell you that they thought you might make a good coach. I don't want to look too deep into your pocket, but what did it actually pay to be a defensive backs coach at Arkansas State in the early 80s?
Oh, let's see. I think I made $35,000. You know, my first job as a high school coach in Arkansas was $8,500 a year. And so it's gone up a little bit. Coaches are making pretty good money nowadays, even on the high school level. You know, you got coaches are making $125,000, $150,000 a year. And, you know, I don't complain with that, and I don't argue with that. People say it's too much. Let me tell you something. There's nobody more important in this country now than coaches at all levels, because we're raising the kids of a lot of people, because 50% of the kids across the country have one or no parent. And it's very important. And it's very important to this country that we have sports, team sports, and we have coaches that teach fundamentals, not just sports fundamentals, but also fundamentals of life, which is self-responsibility, work ethic, leadership, all those things that go along with being an athlete.
Just real quick, we've asked a few other guys in your position. I'm assuming when you're a high school coach, you're also teaching typing, physical education, maybe a history class.
Coaching more than one sport?
Yeah.
Hey, yeah, I coach physics. I coach junior high physics when I was coaching in high school. Had junior girls basketball. My gosh, that'll get you going real quick. You coach those little girls in basketball. In terms of, man, there's always something going on. But anytime you're dealing with kids, you deal with different problems every day. But it's a great job, because you watch them grow up. They're all hungry, you know, for guidance in the things that they do in life. And you have a few that are pretty tough to handle. But you know, that's the reason you're a coach. You should know how to handle it and work through those tough situations with kids that need help.
Tommy Tuberville with us on the Loud Security Systems Newsmaker line. During the Bill Belichick-Saban documentary, Saban said a lot of pro coaches never bothered talking to him as their players left to go to the National Football League. What was that experience like for you in college?
You're talking about this time when draft's coming up.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
you
yes,
would,
sir.
You would have some, and you can tell the real organized programs, even in NFL, there's some of them that are god-awful, and the ones that don't win. They're not organized. They have way too many chiefs, not enough Indians, and they're not organized. At the end of the day, no matter what level you're on, it's about the players. And you're not going to win without players. I don't care how good a coach you are. And, boy, in the NFL, you look at some of these teams, they can't ever get over the hump, because they take guys in the draft that that they just look at athletic ability. I tell people this, and when they come in, and I recruited a kid in 91 when I was at Miami, give me a good, solid athlete that with good work ethic but has a big heart, you're going to win. And that was Ray Lewis. Ray Lewis, I recruited him. He's a 4'7 kid. You know, he's 6 foot, 200-pound, running back, safety. We made a linebacker out of Miami, but he had work ethic and a heart bigger than a tire. I mean, he just loved it and made himself into a great, great football player.
Tommy, is it more important to speak to the head coach, or is it more important to speak to a position coach or a coordinator in your mind when it comes to trying to evaluate a kid day in and day out?
First guy I'd go to if I was a scout or on the league or on the team, I'd go to the strength coach. Strength coach, they spend probably 75% of the time with the kids. Coaches spend about 25%. Strength coaches know their work ethic, their leadership skills. They see it all. They see self-responsibility. They understand the drive that they have. And then, of course, there's a lot of other people. The trainer, can they play with pain? Now, I'm not talking about injury. I'm talking about when they've got a turned ankle and you can take that thing up and it's not going to hurt them anymore. Will they go? Will they push through it? Trainers are very, very important. And of course, you can talk to a lot of people, and you're going to talk to the head coach, and you're going to talk to the assistant coach or coordinator and all those people, but you got to get the people from behind the scenes, the equipment managers. You know, I would go to equipment guys and say, what kind of attitude this guy got? You find a lot out about a kid, how they keep their locker and how they treat their equipment. And it's the little things that count when you get to a level that you're going to spend millions of dollars. You're going to find out just the little points about them that might put you over the top, whether to take them, not take them. I laugh at these guys that come in, they just look at a 40 time. Come on. Quickness wins in football. It's not really the speed. Now, speed in some areas and some positions like a receiver, but quickness for a linebacker, quickness for a D lineman, it's that first four or five steps that are going to make or break and make you into a great player.
Tommy Tuberville with us on the Loud Security Systems Newsmaker line. Ironically, everybody talks about the SEC, rightfully so, being the king of the hill. Obviously, you're the coach of the year in 04. You coach an undefeated Auburn team. You're on the outside looking in. You ever play it out in your mind if there were a playoff today, how that team would have done?
Oh, my goodness. Not many days it doesn't go by. That was probably one of the biggest misjustices in college football, is that team didn't get even a chance to play for a national championship. We were so good. It created a scenario 10 years later. Now, it took 10 years to get the 14 playoff, but it all started with that season in 2004. 2014 was the first year of that. But, and I felt more for the players. Obviously, coaches, we're going to be in a lot of situations where you can put yourself back there. Players can't do that. They only got 3, 4, 5 years in college to get that done, and we were loaded. We had 4 first-round draft picks, and I'll never forget the night of the draft. When we had 4 guys going the first round, these guys were looking at each other going, you know, this must have been a pretty good football team. And it kind of goes to show you, you know, not many people know much about what you have or who you are. No matter whether you're a scout or a commentator or a newspaper writer, you know, they voted number 1 and 2 back then, the AP and the coaches poll, but it was more the AP. That's the reason that you have to do it on the field, because you can't tell what I was talking about recruiting. You can't tell what they got in their heart, and that it was a selfish, athletic, very depth-minded, hard-nosed football team. We could run, we could throw, and just a shame that happened. But I bought them all rings anyway. We always considered the national championship team in 2004.
Hey, listen, undefeated, they can never take that away, and what a backfield that was. You want to talk about first-rounders all over the place.
Yeah, we had the second pick in the draft, Ronnie Brown. I'll never forget Nick Saban. That was his first year at the Dolphins. He called me and says, Tommy, what do you think? I said, well, they're both pretty good, but I tell you, it's hard to beat Ronnie Brown. Look how big he is. And Ronnie Brown had the best hands of any receiver I'd ever been around. That included Michael Irving, all the guys I was around in Miami. This kid could catch a football out of the backfield. He was really the first guy that ran the Wildcat at Miami when he went there. And of course, Carnell Williams, who's now coaching at Auburn, was, I think, the 4th or 5th pick in the first round. Then Jason Campbell, the quarterback, and then Carlos Rogers, a corner, went to Washington. So, man, we had a lot of good players. Jay Ratliff ended up playing and played in the Pro Bowl for the Cowboys as a defensive lineman. Nobody knew him, but he's just a great player.
Tommy, I'm going to break every rule. It's the infamous never ask a man which one of his kids he loves a little bit more. But if I told you the best team at Miami against that 13-0 Auburn team, what happens?
Oh, that, very similar. Very similar because we had it all. We had speed, quickness. We had depth. The thing that we beat Miami with every year, but we beat people, we had defensive linemen. You know, we were always known as receivers and quarterback you and all that at Miami. You couldn't score on us because we had great Jerome Brown, Russell Maryland, Cortez Kennedy, on and on, Warren Sapp, on and on, defensive linemen that could flat out play. And, you know, the Miami team was probably, you know, better at defensive line than my 2004 team at Auburn, but we were solid in that position. Not great, but we were solid. But at Miami, you couldn't score on us. There was one year at Miami, we only gave up like 8 touchdowns all year long. And it was people would come in and think they could play with us, and we'd play around with them. And just a great time being there with Jimmy Johnson and Dennis Erickson those 10 years.
People probably don't remember, especially younger kids out there, the legend that was the late Jerome Brown. They say he was, when his game was on, he was completely unblockable. There was nothing you can do. As great as Reggie White was with him in Philadelphia, as great as Warren Sapp was, Russell Maryland, he was the guy, was he not?
He was. You know, my first year I went there, I went to coach the inside linebackers, and we changed our defense a little bit, and Jimmy Johnson put me with Butch Davis with the defensive line. I coached the two tackles. Well, Jerome was one of those. Now, Jerome was one of those that always stayed nicked up and hurt, and I think he pushed it a little bit, pushed the envelope. He practiced, and he practiced hard, but I'll tell you what, when he hit that game field, much better over the years that I've ever seen. The kid had just tremendous talent, and unfortunately got killed. He was taken in, I think, the first pick in by the Eagles, and had a great career started, and it got killed in a car wreck. But just a natural athlete, very seldom lifted weights. He was just hard-nosed and just loved the game. He was a clown. He was a clown on the field. He was just fun to be around, always funny, laughing, joking, never had a bad day.
Tommy, what was your relationship with some of the coaches in and around the SEC? Because obviously we got some big personalities. It's different now with social media. It's different now. There's more coverage. There's more chances to get on ESPN and promote not only the program but promote yourself. Behind the scenes, what were some of the relationships like?
Very good. You know, some of the guys were hard to get along with. You know, when I first got in the league at Ole Miss, Jackie Sherrill he and Gene Stallings were kind of the two elder statesmen. Of course, with Spurrier, Steve and I have been friends ever since I got in the league back in '95. We played golf a lot together. But as now, you know, you the thing about these guys, a lot of them, some of them are more into not getting around as much. Like Nick. Nick's one of the best coaches, obviously, ever coached. Works hard. He's very focused. But you know, it's hard to get to know Nick. Now I got to know him because I've been around him since 2001, and when he went to LSU, and we built a good relationship together. There's so much changeover now that it's hard to build relationships, and it's so competitive. It's easier during the season. It's the recruiting that really, really gets very, very competitive.
Finishing up with Tommy Tuberville, joins us on the Loud Security Systems Newsmaker line, and we talk about it all the time, Chris and I, Coach, the incestuous nature of the SEC. You go from Ole Miss to Auburn. I mean, you better not burn a bridge in that conference because you may be coaching at that school or have an opportunity to coach at that school in the not-too-distant future.
Yeah, that's a great league. I mean, there's not any better now. I've coached in the Big 12 and the Big East and the you know, some leagues that compare. Now, they got good players and they got good coaches, but, you know, the separation of the SEC is, number one, obviously, is the fans. You don't go into a stadium that's not packed. You know, the interest, the tradition. And the number two is the money that's spent, you know, the facilities. And the other is, obviously, the athletes. But the athletes, really, the linemen, defensive and offensive linemen, are so much better in the SEC than most other leagues. Now, the Big Ten compares a little bit on offensive line, but not near defensive line. And that's sort of the separation in the leagues across the country with the SEC. But it goes back to, again, the interest of the fans and what the fans put into it. I mean, you're going to have people just absolutely going nuts if they call this football season off in the SEC. I mean, the conferences, you know, they can take it or leave it, but not the SEC. This is very important that we have this season coming up.
Hey, Tommy, before we finish, we ask players this because it's a finite number of games. You're only going to get 4 years, sometimes five, but you're going to get a finite number of games. I don't know if we ever ask coaches this. How much do you miss running out of the tunnel in a packed stadium, knowing that I'm going to put my stuff against that guy's stuff today and my guys against that guy's guys today? How much do you miss that part of it?
Oh, the challenge. People ask me, what do you miss about coaching? It's the Saturdays. It's the Saturdays of knowing that you're on one sideline, you got a friend or a cohort or maybe an enemy that you might not like, that you want to absolutely take no prisoners, and you want to make every call right, call every time out at the right time, you have everything planned. People don't realize the planning that goes into a college football game. It is from structured from the time you get up in the morning to everything to what you give them to eat. When they walk out of that dressing room, whether getting on the bus or going back to their dorm room after the game, everything is structured. Everything is fine line to winning, and I think a lot of that separates some of these younger guys getting in from these college or high school ranks into big time college football. They think they're to the promised land. It ain't about the coaching, folks. It is about the organization of your program from every day for 365 and what you can get out of your players. And again, a lot of it starts when they get up every morning. You played for me, you got up every morning at 6 o'clock. And you learn to be self-responsible and be able to know the difference in the time of day. And you saw that sun come up quite often. And that's what I get most out of my players. We relate a lot, over internet or whatever. When I see kids, coach, I always hate to get it up so early in the morning. Every morning I play for you, but I take pride in that because I tell you, a lot of the kids never have to do that in their life. But I think they learn a lot from that.
Hey, coach, before we let you go, you talked about the importance of playing in the SEC. I want to get your thoughts on the realistic possibility of playing football in the spring, playing 24 games in a year. That doesn't seem to me to be possible.
No, you can't do that. I mean, it's impossible. I mean, you don't. What are you going to give them, another 85 players? I mean, this is a physical, tough sport, and everybody talks about adding, games to the national championship, maybe going from 4 teams to 8, 16. You can't do that. I mean, you got to remember, you got to practice, and then you have the games. It is a very tough, physical, demanding sport. And they need a little bit of time off, and they always look forward to that last spring practice day where, man, you get to take a deep sigh of relief for a few weeks, maybe a month, before you really hit the workouts in the summer. But there's no way you can do that. There's no way. I don't know where all that's coming from, but I think there'll be a football season next year. It might be abbreviated. With who's in the stands, but I tell you, a lot of people are anxious to see what happens. Going to have to start school first. I know the NCAA's already said if there's no school, there's no football. So we got to make sure we can go back to school first.
Hey, Tommy, last one for you. When you see guys, big fish, small pond, come to a place like Ole Miss or Auburn or Texas Tech, wherever it is you're coaching, and they've been the big swing and you know what, because in their town, they're all over the place. Defensive guys, there's no book. I'm just going to go make tackles. Offensive guys, I'm just faster than everybody. When you get them gathered up and they look around and you see in their eyes, oh, my God, they're now the realization is there are five of me around here. How quickly do you have to snap people out of it? And how quickly will guys weed themselves out of being big-time players because they can't handle that whole thing?
That's the toughest thing for a football coach, especially the head coach, because you've done a sales job on these 4- and 5-star kids coming in. They think they've made it to the promised land. They have not, I promise you. I used to set all 25 of them down in front of me the first day he came on campus, 20 to 25, whatever you signed. Put them in front of me and said, guys, you got a year. They'd look at you and say, no, you got a year because I'm going to bring better players in here next year. It's going to set in this place. So you got a year here, head start. And if you let these guys catch you, you'll be sitting on the bench. You're going to be wanting to transfer. This is all about competition. And so the big thing that we have now is all these ratings and all this, and parents get involved. Now we're getting into this transfer mode where everybody can transfer. We're going to ruin college football if we don't watch it. But NCAA's really got a yellow streak down their back. They're afraid of somebody suing them or whatever. They better bow up, continue to make this an amateur sport, not a pro sport, and make it tough for these kids on transfer, and don't teach them to quit. That's the one thing that I would never understood. Transfer is about kicking the can down the road, said, I can't do it. I'm going to go somewhere else. And that's not what we teach in this country. We teach hard nose, persistence. You can make it. You just work harder. And unfortunately, we're not doing that now in college sports. We're making it easy for them.
Coach, always appreciate the time. Stay safe and good luck with the Senate runoff. We'll talk down the road.
Okay, thank you, guys.
Thanks, Tommy. Appreciate it.
Tommy Tuberville on the Loud Security Systems Newsmaker line here on The Fan. Hey.